Well, good morning again and welcome to week 12 of It All Started with the Old Testament. We have at least one more week left and then we'll see how God leads the rest of the ideas that are floating in my head. I get ideas, but God's got to sort them out because they're not always great ideas. But, you know, for 3 years, Jesus taught and taught and taught. He taught people how to love. He taught them how to love people, love God, and even love our enemies. He taught people how to pray. He taught people how to serve. He taught people about salvation. And on the night that Jesus shared the Last Supper with his disciples, he continued to teach. John devotes 4 chapters of his gospel to what Jesus taught on that night. 4 chapters over 1 meal. Very rich teaching. And included these phrases that he repeats several times. John 14, verse 15. He says, "If you love me, keep my commands." Verse 21, "Whoever has my commands and keeps them is the one who loves me." Verse 23, he replied, "Anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. Anyone who does not love me will not obey my teaching." I think he made it pretty clear, right? Obedience. In Matthew 28, as he was going to ascend into heaven, he gave one of his final commands. "Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you." And this teaching is reiterated in 1 John 5, verse 2. This is how we know that we love the children of God, by loving God and carrying out his commandments. In fact, this is love for God, to keep his commands. And his commands are not burdensome. Now, I can go on and give you many, many more examples from the New Testament. But as you can clearly see, we are told to obey the commands that we have been given. But we're not just obedient subjects. God isn't simply a dictator. Our obedience is relational. Our obedience is a sign of our love to God. But this isn't just something for the Old Testament. Our call to obedience goes back to the Old Testament. We know that through the covenant with Abraham, his descendants were to become the nation of Israel. They were God's children, and God was their God. And there was a relationship, and there was love. God gave them the law, and God expected them to be obedient to the law. Many times in the book of Deuteronomy, Moses repeated these words from God. This one comes from Deuteronomy 12, verse 28. "Be careful to obey all these regulations I am giving you, so that it may always go well with you and your children after you. Because you will be doing what is good and right in the eyes of the Lord your God." Do you see how relational this is? When God's children are obedient, God will bless them. And I want to point out that last phrase, "what is good and right in the eyes of the Lord your God." He didn't say do good what you think is good. Do right in the eyes of the Lord your God. Joshua was the leader who followed Moses, and again he relays the same command. 22 verse 5. "But be very careful to keep the commandment and the law that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you. To love the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, to keep his commands, to hold fast to him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul." It might sound familiar from things I've preached in the past. And if you know anything about the Old Testament and the history of the Israelites, when the Israelites were obedient, When the Israelites' hearts followed God, God blessed them. God protected them. God delivered them. And when the Israelites turned from God, when they were disobedient, God took away their blessing and allowed them to fall. The book of Judges is a perfect example of the continued cycle of obedience and disobedience. Judges 2 gives us a summary of everything that's to come in the book of Judges. Verse 16 says, they quickly turned from the ways of their ancestors who had been obedient to the Lord's commands. Whenever the Lord raised up a judge for them, he was with the judge and saved them. But when the judge died, the people returned to ways even more corrupt than those of their ancestors, following other gods and serving and worshiping them. They refused to give up their evil practices and stubborn ways. And as we look through the book of Judges, we see a common phrase. From Judges 3, verse 7, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. They forgot the Lord their God and served the Baals and Asherahs. Verse 12, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Chapter 4, verse 1, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Judges 6, verse 1, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Judges 10, verse 6, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And in chapter 13 and chapter 21, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And chapter 21, verse 25, in those days, Israel had no king, and everyone did as they saw fit. And even in the days when Israelites had a king, read through 1 Kings, 2 Kings, and Chronicles, the cycle of obedience and disobedience continued. The cycle of blessing and punishment continued. And I think that last statement represents what we are seeing today in God's church. That everyone did as they saw fit. They did what they wanted. What they thought was okay. I can't tell you how many times I hear from people, well, I don't believe. Well, I think. I don't feel. People are living out Christianity by the way they see fit and not by what God has commanded. Not by what Jesus has commanded. It's not about what we think or feel or desire. See, God blesses his obedient people. However, the opposite is true. God also punishes his disobedient children. God takes off his hand of blessing, and his children experience times of distress. This is the same truth that we have today. Loving God and following his commands brings us blessing. One example is back in John chapter 14. Believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me, or at least believe on the evidence of the works themselves. Verily, truly, I tell you, whoever believes in me will do the works I have been doing, and they will do even greater things than these because I am going to the Father. And I will do whatever you ask in my name so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. You may ask me for anything in my name, and I will do it. Isn't that something? Our obedience brings us blessings. Our obedience will bring God's favor. Now, we have to be careful because there are people out there preaching a prosperity gospel. This does not promise wealth and fame. Does not promise us earthly success. What it promises us is success within God's will. If you carefully read the scriptures, it says to glorify God, to do God's will. Whatever leads people to God, that's where we're going to get God's success. That's where he will answer our prayers. That is where he will lead us. And the good news in all of this is God just is not leaving us alone to do this. He goes on to say in 14, all of this I have spoken while still with you, but the advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all things and will remind you of everything that I have said to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. As obedient children of God, we are promised the Holy Spirit. We are promised peace, and we are promised that we can live without fear. 1 Peter 2 teaches us this, but you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. See, this is important for us to remember, that as Christians, as the church, we are God's people. We are his nation, and we are supposed to be a holy nation. And the word holy means set apart, different, special, unique. He goes on to say in verse 11, "Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from your sinful desires which wage war against your soul." See, once we come to faith in Jesus Christ, we are no longer citizens of this world. We have become citizens of another country. If all of a sudden I had Canadian citizenship, I wouldn't be a citizen of the United States, would I? I would be technically a foreigner here. And we have to think in a spiritual nature that we are not citizens of this world. We are citizens of God. In this world, we are technically foreigners. And he goes on to say, "Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day that he visits." Now, the Israelites were an actual nation, a nation that at times disobeyed God, rejected God, and served the gods of the world. And we saw earlier in the service, the Israelites lost God's blessing, and as a result, they suffered. Today, as Christians, we are a different kind of nation. We need to think beyond countries and boundaries. And I know a lot of people want to think of the United States as the new nation of God and all of this, but that is worldly thinking. That is limited thinking. As Christians, we are God's people. And we have many promises that come with being God's people. But just like the Israelites, we must remain obedient to receive God's blessing. We must follow what Jesus taught us. We must go and make disciples. We must love the lost. We must serve God. We must serve each other. We must get rid of sin and strive to be that holy people. And if you ask me, we as Christians, we as the church, are living worldly lives and not godly lives. Oh, we may not be serving other gods, but don't we have other gods? Some of us are going to go home and pray to the football gods. Some of us are gods to Hollywood. Some of our gods are in money, possessions, and other things. Some of our gods are politics. To some people, they are worshiping candidates and not ideals. We need to get back to what worked. How do we live it out as an obedient church? Well, we go back to the book of Acts. And it says they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. They devoted themselves. They were absolutely obedient. And through the power of the Holy Spirit, the church experienced two great things. First, we see that everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. The early church saw miracle after miracle after miracle after miracle. I mean, they saw people who could suddenly speak in a foreign language they had never spoken before. They saw the disciples preach with such amazing power and authority. I mean, in one day, Peter preached and thousands repented. They saw healings. They saw people raised from the dead. And more importantly, we see in verse 47, the last half says, "And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved." Now, you ask me today, does that represent the Christian church in America? We are on a decline. And I think it's because we have not been an obedient church. We have to get back to obedience and devotion to God. We have to be devoted to His Word. We have to be devoted to gathering for worship, devoted to the sacraments. And when we do that, we are going to see God do great things.